side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though you meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side may also find you. So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way if we keep on the sunny side of life.
Well, folks, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show, and on the phone with us, all the way from the big city of Guelph, is Mr. Tommy Hunter, and he is going to be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 27th Annual Covenant Awards tonight here in Toronto. This year, the CGMA wants to honor Tommy for his years in television and the strong gospel music content of his shows, particularly the great number of times he closed the show with a singing of a hymn or an inspirational reading. His guests over the years included many gospel music artists, including Christy Lane, Johnny Cash, Roy Rogers, and Dale Evans, Ricky Skaggs, and many, many others. Please welcome to the show Mr. Tommy Hunter. Tommy, thank you. It is such a privilege to be able to speak with you.
Well, thank you very much, Drew. It's a real honor to talk to you, and I want to thank the Canadian Gospel and Music Association and all of its members for voting and presenting me with this Lifetime Achievement Award. I think it's just wonderful. You were right at the beginning of your announcement that when you mentioned about doing songs of inspiration or readings, and we did them on every single show and did them for 27 years. And I always felt that they were a strong part of the show, and according to the ratings, that was the highest rated part of our show. Was that ending.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It really is. I think when people, when Canadians think of your name, this is the group of Canadian things they lump you in with. Are you ready for this? The Beachcombers, Stomp and Tom Connors, The Uncle Bobby Show, Tiny Talentine, The Friendly Giant, SCTV, Elwi Yost, Don Messer's Jubilee. I mean, that's Canada right there.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, well, let's talk about the beginnings here. Now, I know you grew up in London, right? You're living in Guelph now, but you grew up in London.
Mm-hmm.
And if I got things right here, 1946, you bugged your dad enough to get you some guitar lessons for $1 a week, which included a rental guitar.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
That's kind of how it all went down.
Well, that's how it all started. I went to see a show at the London Arena with Roy Acuff, and I was very much fascinated by the sound of the acoustic instruments and the sound of that earthiness. Remember, this was back in a time when there were no drums and no electrified instruments, so it was strictly an acoustic evening. And I kept bugging my dad. He thought that it would wear off after a couple of weeks, but I kept hounding him. And finally, he heard of a teacher that was giving lessons by the name of Edith Hill Adams. And Edith Hill Adams would, for $1, she would teach you to play the guitar, and she would give you a guitar for so many weeks. And if you stayed taking lessons, then you could buy the guitar at the end of it. And I think it was like $14. All right, they may have even given you the guitar. I don't know.
But now, speaking of guitars, what are you playing these days?
Well, I play a Patrick guitar made in Canada, Simon Patrick. I for many years played Martin guitars, and I use them periodically. Every once in a while I'll switch back and forth. I have a couple of Gibsons that I use. I have an old J200N.
Wow.
And I use it once in a while. And but on tour, I usually use the Simon Patrick. I like them, and I think they're a nice guitar, and they're a Canadian-made product. I think they do a real fine job.
Tommy, I got to ask you this. I don't know anything about your dad except he used to work in the railroad. Is that,
mm-hmm,
is that right?
Yeah.
Who do you think had more of an influence in your life, your dad or Roy Acuff?
Who? Well, I'd still say my dad. My dad had a very strong influence on my life. And Roy Acuff, from a different aspect, Roy Acuff was an inspiration for me. And it was later in life that Roy and I became very good friends, particularly when I would run into him at the Opry if I was down there. Then when our television show was picked up on the Nashville Network, Roy was my biggest fan. And they moved me from Saturday to Sunday, and Roy went right straight across into the head of the network and said, "You put that show back on." Anyway, they moved the show for Roy and put it right back on. I think it was ahead of the Opry or right behind the Opry.
Right.
And Roy would always come into the green room and sit there and watch the show every night. And he said to me, he used to say to people around it, and he said it to me personally, he said, "You saw my show as a child, didn't you?" And I said, "I sure did." And I said, "And that show that I do today is basically a format that I remember when I was 9 years of age that I took from you, that basic same format."
Well, you certainly added professionalism and quality to the show. I mean, I read somewhere that you didn't know what you wanted, but you knew what you didn't want. You didn't want a barn and hay bales. In other words, you wanted to lift the quality of the program so that you would attract a wider audience.
Exactly. I thought that our music had reached a particular level where we didn't have to apologize for it anymore, and I felt that getting it out of a barn and putting it into other venues would broaden its appeal, and I thought once people would listen to it and see it without always being hanging around in a barn, I think they would really learn to appreciate it. And obviously it worked, because country music went into Carnegie Hall, and they took bluegrass music, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs went in and did a very successful stint at Carnegie Hall. I was proud to be part of a show called Country Music on Broadway, where we played at Madison Square Gardens, and certainly did land office business there. So we were beginning to take country music into areas that were not used to having country music.
Well, I just love the way that you did it with class. I mean, and another comment I read is that you wanted it to be up in the caliber of the likes of the Perry Como show, which again, another classy show. So good job for doing that. And I think that's really what gave you the staying power.
Well, thank you very much. I never wanted to talk down to the people. I wanted to make sure that the cameras allowed the entertainers to come across. I always had this vision that people were sitting in their living rooms watching the show, and I didn't want a lot of gimmicks or things that were between the artist and the individual sitting at home. So I always felt that people were being invited into their living room, and that's the look. I didn't want a lot of gimmicks around so that you would come confused to who the person was, and just straightforward presentation.
No, well, you did it fantastic. Now, you came a long way. I mean, at the start, again, we're talking about the beginnings here, and we're on the phone with Tommy Hunter. You know, I don't even have to explain that name. Most times I have to say who is the person, but all I have to say is Tommy Hunter.
Well, I don't know. If you talk to someone who's 17 or 18, they may not know who I am.
Was talking to someone the other day who's 23, and she said she knows you.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. My dad was a massive fan. What was the time slot on CBC? Do you remember?
We started off on Friday night, and then we went from Friday to Sunday nights for a while.
Right.
And then we went from Sunday back to Saturday night.
Right, right. Well, I just remember as a young child coming out of the bath, putting on the bathrobe, and my dad would be in the TV room and be watching the Tommy Hunter show. And it was a memorable moment for my dad and I to do something together. He was very busy with work, but this was something. Hockey Night in Canada and Tommy Hunter were a few things. Don Messer's Jubilee. These are things that we kind of watched together.
Well, isn't that nice? You know, so many of the families today do not sit as a family and watch television.
No, because we all have six TVs.
Yeah, there are things on television that I wouldn't want to watch as a family.
No, that's right.
Because I would frankly be embarrassed at some of the things that are on television.
Well, again, starting out, you played in churches, you played in hospitals, garden parties, strawberry socials. You probably played a few turkey dinners as well.
And, well, I sure did.
And the Legion, even.
Many shows at the Legion,
yeah.
Yes.
And influences in your life, Eddie Arnold, Hank Snow, who else? Roy Acuff?
Roy Acuff, Hank Williams, of course, and Jim Reeves, George Morgan. I remember all these are... These were all people, and you know, it was really wonderful because I got a chance to work with all of them. Mm. And it's like growing up with all your boyhood idols and then suddenly having them come to your house and do a show for you. I not only had them come to my house or to the studio and do the shows, but it gave you a chance to sit backstage when we weren't busy taping and get to know them. And I enjoyed having them come in. Many of them come into the dressing room and we'd sit down and talk for a while, and or during lunch break or a coffee break we would sit down and just exchange pleasant stories. Sometimes nothing about the business, just about, you know, little personal things or things that's happening in their lives, or you know, how their folks were and what they were doing.
Sure.
And it was, so I really got a chance to know a lot of my boyhood heroes.
Tommy, tell me about the time you got laughed at while trying to play the part of a hillbilly singer.
Well, that happened down in London. I was a radio announcer by the name of Lloyd Wright had asked me to go over and audition for a show, a musical called Dark of the Moon. And they wanted me to play the guitar and sing a couple of these hillbilly folk songs. And I really didn't want to do it. It seemed like it was out of my element, and I wasn't really involved in the theater. But he insisted. He said, I just think it would be a real good opportunity for you to learn. So, I went to the audition and I figured, well, I chose about the, two or three of the most hillbilly things that I could find. Bill Monroe or, you know,
sure.
The Stanley Brothers. And I went in there and gave it my best hillbilly shot. Well, these people were falling out of their seats. And I finished and they said, we'll get in touch with you. And they were chuckling and laughing. And I put the guitar away and went home. And the next day, they called and said, boy, we really liked what you did. And I said, liked what you did? You laughed at me. You know, I was really insulted and really upset. And they said, no, they just never heard anything like that. And so they want you to go back. And I said, nah, I'm not going back. And I wouldn't. I really didn't want to go back. Well, finally, they called me and convinced me to go back. And I went in, and this same group of people, we traveled, became very good friends. And, we traveled around Ontario. We won the Southwestern Ontario Drama Festival. We won the Ontario Drama Festival, the regional. We won about everything you could win, and that put us in line to compete in the Dominion Drama Festival, which was being held that year in Victoria, British Columbia. And so we all got ready and went on the train. And of course, back in those days, you had a sleeping car or a regular passenger car during the day with seats in it, and then at nighttime they folded all those seats down and pulled something down out of the roof, and you had an upper and a lower berth. Well, during the night they got all the things lowered down, and we would all have a great big party. So we went into one of the cars and they said, get your guitar. And it was a good teaching lesson, because here were a group of people that knew nothing about my music. They knew what I was singing in the play, but now we got to do something different. So I picked songs that I could get them to participate in, and I got them clapping hands, and I'd say, okay, come on, clap your hands, here's a good rhythm. I don't have any band, so I'd get them clapping hands, and then I would sing the song, and then I'd get them to join in on the chorus. And they were all sort of real simple repetitive songs. And suddenly here was, I realized that here's a whole group of total strangers. Many of them worked for the university. They were professors of English. One was another professor of science or something. Anyway, there was all these group of people from many walks of life that had never heard of this type of music, and yet here they are sitting in a car, tapping their feet, having a good time, and really enjoying the music. And I thought, boy, I never realized at the time what a great learning experience that was. So we all became wonderful friends. I was 15 years of age when I did that, and they would all help me with my schoolwork. And like I said, there was a couple of professors, so I had to take a whole collection of work with me. So during the day, while the train was rolling along, I was busy in school, and they made sure I stayed in school.
You know, this is something I think people forget is all of this is happening while you're 15 years old. I mean, you're not 23 or whatever. It's 15.
Yeah, that's right. It was very young. And I was very fortunate while I was out west. We competed in the Dominion Drama Festival. We did not win out there, and we didn't do extremely well. But there was a radio personality in the audience by the name of Norm Pringle, and Norm invited me to his radio show that was in Victoria, British Columbia, and so I got, he called the hotel and said if I'd like to come down, and I thought I was just going to go down and sing a song, and he set up the microphone, and luckily I took a songbook with me, and he put it up on the stand, and they grabbed an old guitar that they had lying around the studio. And he put me in front of the microphone and put on the headset, and he said, now for the next 30 minutes, here's a young fellow from London, Ontario. Saw him last night in a play called Dark of the Moon. Here's Tommy Hunter. I thought, for 30 minutes? And boy, I tell you, I just about didn't know what to do. But I think I used every cliche word that I'd ever heard on radio. I mean, I was, it was so funny, and I felt like I was talking to the world. Here was this microphone in front of me, and I thought, people are actually listening, and it was a shocking experience, but I told them how happy I was to be there, and said, now here's a little song I'd like to do for your folks. This is stuff that I heard on radio, and oh, it was unbelievable. So, I think somewhere he still has a tape of that, so I did a few songs, and then I recorded a bunch of songs for him after, and he kept playing them among all of his other things, and I kept getting fan mail. He would send me all these fan letters and things, so he was building me into quite a local personality in around this radio station, CKDA in Victoria.
You know, I remember I grew up in Richmond Hill, and my father would always have, was it CFGM? Is that
CFGM?
What
CFGM? Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So that was Alan Slate station.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tommy, you went from that all the way into Country Hoedown, and then to your own 30-minute black and white show in 1965 at the age of 28 for 27 years until June of 92.
Yes, that's right.
I just.
Well, boy, it's a long time, isn't it? Well, I started on Country Hoedown when I was 19. 19 years of age, and we did that show for 9 years, and so you've got the numbers right.
But did you miss growing up? I mean, like you didn't have a normal childhood.
No, I did in many ways, but once I found that guitar at nine, boy, I tell you, I really had a friend, and I wanted to play the guitar. Really, I wanted to play that thing so badly. And basically, if you really want to know the truth, all I wanted to do was to play rhythm guitar behind a singer. I never really wanted to have my own show or sing. I just wanted to sit behind and just play rhythm guitar. And, cause back in those days, they did not, as I said, they didn't have drums. So the rhythm guitarist was the drummer. He was the guy that stood behind and did that 2-4 beat.
Yeah.
Behind. But it was a wonderful experience. Like I said, I had, when I did the television show, I had the best seat in the house.
Sure.
I got the opportunity to introduce a lot of people to television when our show went stateside for 6 or 7 years. It gave a wonderful opportunity for so many of the youngsters to get a broader stage to work on. It gave them another whole market.
Tommy, for 27 years of the Tommy Hunter Show, there must have been some embarrassing moments. I would love to hear anything, any good story you can tell me. I love a good laugh. There's something must have gone crazy on the show.
I'm trying to, well, there's a couple of visual things that, you know, that I can remember it with Ray Price on the show one time that was all done in black. He was doing Help Me Make It Through the Night. During the rehearsal, it was, all the stage was black and it was risers. I was up about 5 feet off the floor. But when we shot the show, the floor was black, the room was black, there was just a small spotlight on Ray Price when he was singing Help Me Make It Through the Night, and suddenly they cued me and I stepped out and was walking. The only thing is that I thought that the stage was there and it wasn't, and I walked out and stepped right off. boy, I tell you, my teeth, I thought they were wound up at the top of my forehead. And they stopped, and I said to Ray, could you help me make it through the next hour? My back is killing me. So anyway, that was the beginning of some back problems that I still have today. But you know, it's funny. I could tell you funny stories, but some of them are visual. Maybe when I see you later tonight, I'll tell you a couple of funny stories. Well, let me tell you one quick story. I had a guy come down to the show, and we were doing a radio show at this time and the television show. So he came over and auditioned, and he said he wanted to audition for the Tommy Hunter television show. So he said, great. So we set up a time, and he came in, and he had a suitcase full of hats and little gimmicky things. Well, he brought out a record player, and he put on the record player of Frankie Lane. I'll never forget it. Frankie Lane singing Mule Train. And you know where they go, Mule Train, and then you heard snap, snap of the whip.
Crack of the whip, yep.
Well, he put on this, the most ridiculous looking cowboy hat. Gee, it was funny. He got this little whip out that it looked like a pencil with a string on it, see? He put the needle on this record, and of course Frankie Lane starts singing Mule Train, hippity hop, ha ha, you know. This guy's mouthing every word, doing pantomime, and he was wonderful. He had great actions, and it was hysterical. And I said, that is really terrific. He says, you liked it, so can I go on television? And I said, you don't understand. Like, it's a record. No, he wanted to go on my radio show. That's what it was.
Oh,
and I said, I can't put you on the radio show because when I introduce you, people can't see you. He would hear Frankie Lane singing Mule Train.
He wants to go on the radio.
Yeah, he wanted to go on the radio show. That's right. He made specific. No, I'm not. I don't need the television show. I can't do that, but I want to go on your radio show.
He just didn't get it.
And I'm telling you, the more serious he got, the funnier it got. I thought somebody was putting him on. But anyway, no, he was dead serious. So he said, that's the trouble with you guys, you know, that work at CBC. Once you're in, you won't let anyone else.
Oh, man.
So he stormed out of there with his hat and his pencil with the whip on it and the funny cowboy hat, and never saw him again.
Oh, my goodness.
But there were always little odd things that were going on, light bulbs that blew up in the middle of the thing. And, you know, but generally we didn't have we were producing a lot of shows, and in order to work at the level that we wanted to work at, most of the things, we didn't have time for a lot of nonsense or fooling around. Like, we were really under the gun, and we couldn't have people that were standing on stage trying to learn their lyrics or their dialogue. We expect you to come into the studio knowing what you were doing, where you were going to stand, and we pushed that envelope to keep it at that particular level. So the producers, directors, writers, cameramen, everybody knew, you know, what the level was, and we worked very hard at it. And it's a wonderful credit. I mean, to the people, I get the, I guess because of the name of the show, I get the glory for it, but believe me, a lot of that glory goes to the people behind the scenes. They were extremely talented, and I was very fortunate in the last 12, 15 years to have assembled probably the greatest, most, talented people, from writing, cameramen, set designers, costume designers, producers, directors that could have ever been assembled. So wasn't me. It was just surrounding yourself with a lot of very, very talented, good people.
Sure. I mean, you had Norman Jewison, of all people.
Yeah. Jewison did back in the early days of Country Hoedown, and he was great. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed working with him, and Tommy Common and I were singing a duet together, and we didn't get it right all day long. And I thought it was so bad, I expected Jewison to walk down and say, okay, it's coming out of the show. And we were hoping that's what he would say.
Yeah.
Well, we're about an hour away from showtime, and he just walked out like that, and we had just finished rehearsing. It was the worst. It kept getting worse. It wasn't getting any better. We had an hour break, and we were huddled in the corner expecting to get the stick beat over us. And Jewison walked by, and he just looked at us with a smile. He says, it's getting dark, guys. It's getting dark. Meaning that I'm not cutting it, and you're going to do it. Well, Common and I went into the back room up in old Studio 4 in Young Street. And, boy, we worked and we worked and we worked. We didn't go out for supper. We didn't do anything. We got the lyrics and made sure we knew them. And we put it together, and it worked perfectly.
Huh.
Just worked perfectly. So... And we had choreography, which is another element that I was, any choreographer thinks of me, Tommy Hunter, doing choreography. I swear they're still shuddering today.
Yeah, you're a choreographer's nightmare, are you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's all I can do just to put the left foot in front of the right.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. Well, and I'll just remind our listeners, we're on the phone with Tommy Hunter. And just reminiscing, really, talking about the good old times. Actually, speaking of that, 11 years after your show went off the air in March 2003, CBC put on Talk About the Good Times.
Yeah, that was
huge.
Good. I really wasn't sure if I wanted to do a special, and to tell you the reason how it was in the planning stages 3 months before I ever got wind of it. My business manager and CBC got together and they were discussing it. And it came down to the bottom line. They said, well, we'd like him to do the show. And he said, it wouldn't make any difference whatever you paid him. He won't do it until, the only way he'll do it is if you've got all of his friends, the people that did the show. That's the only way he'll do it. And boy, I'll tell you, the cameramen, I thank them very much. I think three of the cameramen were retired. We had five cameras doing that special, and three of them came out of retirement and did that. My set designer came back. My costume designer came back. The producers, the directors, the writers, my musical arranger, and it was just wonderful. All of that group came back, and the band that I travel with, the Traveling Men, I got them on the show, had them back playing with us, and so it was really great. It was a wonderful experience for everybody, and it was nice to see some of the young people who were in various positions, and to see the older guys come in, and they didn't take over, they just sat beside them and worked with them. And by the end of the association of working together, many of them came over and said, boy, I can't tell you how much I learned from some of those old guys. That was great.
That's neat.
So when they first started, their noses were a little out of joint, but after a while, they really learned a lot.
Well, let's talk about, and I know you probably get this question every time you get interviewed, but the most memorable guests. I mean, you've had Garth Brooks, the Judds, Wayne and Schuster, Ann Murray, Johnny Cash, Roy Rogers, Dale Evans, Ricky Skaggs. Did you ever have Gordon Lightfoot on your show?
Yeah, we sure did.
You had Shania Twain, or back then I guess she was called Ellie, wasn't she?
Ellie Twain. Well, Gordon Lightfoot, I always love to tell this story. Gordon Lightfoot was a dancer on Country Hoedowns, and I have a picture that is on my wall of me with a guitar in a rhinestone suit, and in the background is Gordon Lightfoot doing his dancing.
Wow.
He was quite a hoofer.
A little known fact about Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, and a great guy and a fine singer. He was just starting to sing, and he wrote a song called Remember Me, and he brought it to me, and I did it on my radio show one Friday. I think that was probably the first time that that a Gordon Lightfoot song had ever been heard outside of Lightfoot. I don't even think he had made any recordings yet.
Are you two roughly the same age, or?
Oh, well, naturally, Gordy's much older than me. No, he isn't. No. I think we're both about the same age.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, because I mean, I was just thinking of the timeline there. I'm a huge Gordon Lightfoot fan and have been for years. And I went to his concerts as a teenager, and you know, there were very few teenagers at a Gordon Lightfoot concert. But I sure appreciated his stuff over the years.
Oh, now, extremely talented, a brilliant writer.
But the booze got the better of him, didn't it?
For a short time, and then he kicked all of that, and. He's kicked all that now, and I think he's better now than he's ever been. He's looking much better, and Gordy's a great, great guy.
Yeah.
He really is. I do one of his songs in my concerts when we're on the road. I include a song by that Gord wrote.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in the dressing room, and I used to love playing bluegrass on the guitar, put a capo on and sort of play that bluegrass style, and he would come over and watch and ask me, how do you do that? Do that thing again. And I would teach him a couple little bluegrass little tricks on that I had learned, and he thought that was just great. And if you listen to some of his, I mean, he's a much better guitar player than I am now. I mean, very good. But every once in a while, he'll play a particular style, and I can hear that bluegrass style, that little thing that he developed.
What about Garth Brooks? I mean, that must have been early in his career that he was on your show.
It was. He was just getting started. He had three or four major hits, and I remember him coming into the studio, and he came in to do the rehearsal. He wasn't sure, you know, about everything, and he had his guard up on everything, like, when is this going to be, and what is this, and where are we going here? And he really wanted to know where he stands, what he was going to do. So finally, after he went through, and then he heard, they played the soundtrack, played what we had recorded, the band. He said, gee, is that ever great? He said, that's better than the record. And all of a sudden, he started taking a look at the cameras and everything else. He was watching the monitors, and he says, boy, this ever great. And he couldn't get over the fact that we were on time, that we said he was supposed to be at the studio at 10:15, and he was supposed to do something at 10:15. He did it, and over here, back here, and the car would pick him up, take him here, and everything. He said, wow, this is really a professional show, because they weren't used to it. And I've been in the States, and it's like the old thing is you get there at 2:00, and you're lucky if you're rehearsing at 5:00.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, you just stand around. It's so disorganized, and whereas here we had to do it that way because we were doing three shows in a week.
Hmm.
You know, so that's
you had to run a tight ship.
You sure did.
Yeah,
yeah. And Les Pouliot was the producer, and he whipped that whole thing right into shape. He was the best producer I ever had.
Tommy, do you keep in touch with any of the old guests you've had on, like Shania? I mean, you and Shania don't keep in touch at all, or Wayne and Schuster, or Ann Murray, or
not really. You know, they're busy traveling. I do see every once in a while. We'll go to a special function, and I will run into various friends of mine that I see. You know, or you get a chance to meet every once in a while. The phone will ring, and I'll get a phone call from a couple of the artists. Just happen to be thinking about you, and hi, how are you?
Hmm.
I talked to Bill Anderson a while ago, and it was funny. You mentioned Garth Brooks, and Garth and Bill were just sitting down having dinner in a restaurant, and so we sat and chatted with them with Garth and Bill for about 20 minutes.
Oh, good.
And when we went to Hank Snow, it's like these sad things sometimes. When we went to Hank Snow's funeral, there was a great gathering of country music artists there. So it's, sadly, it's a chance for you to get to see a lot of the artists that you don't normally see, because they're going north and you're heading west, and when you're going east, they're coming south.
Yeah.
And you're all over the place.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, we're on the phone with Tommy Hunter, and I've got to ask, I mean, I read the list of awards that you've received, and there's a ton of them. What award have you received that you are the most proud of?
Well,
that's a tough question.
Yeah, well, of course, I was very proud to have received the Order of Canada and the Order of Ontario. I mean, these are all recognition from your country, and I greatly appreciated that. There's a lot of I was very thankful for the awards that I got for cystic fibrosis. I did a lot of work with those people, and they were wonderful people, and cystic fibrosis is a tremendous expense on a family. And I was very, very proud when I got the Communication Award for that, and so it was, there's all these awards are, they're very, very much appreciated, and they're very humbling, and I do appreciate them.
Well, Tommy, look, originally we said we'd talk for maybe 30 minutes, and it is just flown by, and I haven't even gotten to the spiritual stuff. Do you have a few more minutes to chat
sure.
with us?
Yes.
I want to ask you about your spiritual journey. I mean, that's a big part of our show. We chat with all sorts of people about their spiritual lives, and I guess the first question would be, how did it begin for you? Did you grow up in a church family?
Yes, I did, and my mother and father, my mother more so, was a real churchgoer, and so was my grandmother. And I remember, I went to Sunday schools and attended all the various functions, and I remember my grandmother she kept planting seeds. I guess when I was homesick, or they were, my grandmother would come in if I couldn't go to school, and she would sit there while I was maybe ill or had the measles or something, and she always would read the Bible or give me little things to look forward to, or set little lines of prophecy that she, I remember her one time talking to me about Israel and saying, watch for a country called Israel. And when you see a country called Israel, remember I was born in 1937. Mm-hmm. Israel didn't come into being until 1948. So she planted an awful lot of seeds along the way. So when I was traveling and I wasn't going to church in a regular way, in many ways, worldly things would be happening. There would be a lot of things that would be taking place in the world, and I would read or hear or see them, and I would think, boy, there's some significance there. I wonder why that happened and this happened. And I remember my grandmother saying something about this. So when you go back and later on in life, I mean, a lot of the things that my mother and the guidelines that my parents established with me and the things that I learned in Sunday school, I carried them with me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was always on those sort of standards. I carried on to the television show. There were a lot of things that I would correct, or I would alter scripts because I thought they had a double meaning, and I would watch and screen any kind of joke or something that if it had a double meaning, I would take it out of the show. So the standards that I learned, simple standards in a Sunday school, and the standards that my parents established with me, I carried through the television show. And I realized there was still an awful lot lacking, and I went to a seminar that was put on by the Christadelphians called How to Learn to Read the Bible Effectively. And I started asking questions. I had a cousin out west who handed me a couple of books, And I read those on while we were on tour, and there are a lot of questions that I started asking, and I thought, you know, I really find it difficult. I read the Bible, I'll pick it up, and to be honest with it, it's a very difficult book. If you put it back down and stop, you're in trouble. You just have to keep reading and reading, and eventually you will start to learn how to do this. So when this course came up, it was very beneficial to me. So I went and took the course, and it was only a 6 or 8 week course, and that really helped me. And then they asked me at the end of the course, and several other people, would you like to, you know, start at the beginning of the Bible and go through it, you know, start like out of Genesis. And I thought, boy, that would be interesting. So I did that, and I studied that, and I started going to church a lot more, and started going to Bible classes, and started going back to a couple of more Bible classes, and was spending a lot of time. And then I decided, it was back in 2000, that I got baptized, and I'm very happy and very thankful for those little things that my grandmother and my mother put in my head as a child. And I'm glad that I had enough brains and enough sense to finally pursue it and do something about it.
So later in life, in the year 2000, you got where did you get baptized?
In Brantford, Ontario.
Brantford?
Yeah.
Huh. A little church. What was church did you get baptized at?
It's a Christadelphian hall.
Yeah.
And over on Dunstan Street.
Okay.
And so it was, you know, and I still continue to go to, when they have the seminars, I still go to the Learn to Read the Bible seminars. You know, you're still, what I missed in one, I'll pick up in another, and what I missed in another one, year after year, I'll pick up some more.
Sure.
But,
so do you get a chance to go to church much these days?
Oh, I sure do.
In Guelph, do you?
No, I go to Brantford.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I go to Brantford usually Sunday morning, Sunday evening.
How long of a drive is that for you?
About an hour, 45 minutes to an hour.
So you drive an hour to church?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it must be a good church.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's you know, the greatest thing you've got is to learn, is to read the Bible, read it and read it and read it, and don't sometimes allow somebody to stand on a platform and just read it to you and you say, oh yeah, and close it up and go. When they quote doctrine to you, open it up and read it for yourself. And when you get home that night, open it up and read it and make sure that what they were talking about is right on target. And if you don't, ask questions, and don't be afraid to ask questions and learn. I think it's very, very important.
Folks, we're on the phone with Tommy Hunter, and Tommy, you know, we think back on our spiritual journeys. There's quite often turning points or defining moments in our spiritual life, and as we look back, hindsight, we can remember those points. Would you say that maybe the prostate cancer in your life would be a turning point, or the closing of the show would be a turning point?
Well, it was funny, the closing of the show, I think that having prostate cancer certainly made me aware. I certainly made sure that I said a prayer before I went in that operating room, but I didn't, if anything serious happened, I felt in my own heart, in my own mind, that I was prepared. That I didn't have a fear of dying. I had a joy of maybe living. But you know, with the closing of the show, whenever I closed the show, I always said, you know, we'll talk to you next week, be the good Lord willing. And that I picked up as a child, and I did it one time quite by accident. I was asked, we were running, the show was short, and they asked me to stretch it, and we talk, and I just went back, and I just thanked the guests, and they kept giving me the stretch sign, and I mentioned all of their names, and said, we've had a wonderful time tonight, and I want to thank Johnny Cash, and Loretta Lynn, and the Rhythm Pals, and Al Cherney, and I went through the whole list of names, and then they said, okay, wrap it up, and I said, so, be the good Lord willing, we'll see you next week. And so that was it. And next week, of course, I didn't say it, and boy, we got tons of mail.
Really?
Yeah. And so from there on in, I said it every single week. And that was a phrase, that I, it's very common among Christadelphians. And I always remember in Sunday school, he'd be saying, well, now there's a Sunday school picnic coming up. We're going to be holding it at such and such a place, and it starts at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and so be the good Lord willing, we'll see everybody there. And I kept saying, boy, I hope the good Lord is willing, because I want to be there for that Sunday school picnic. So it was just, isn't it something how it was planted in the back of your mind, and ad-libbing, it just came out. And I continued to do it, and then you learn that there's a meaning to it. So when somebody said, I'll see you next week, you say, good Lord willing, I'll be there, and you mean it. That it's not, it puts the person in control who is in control. And you have to realize that there is somebody in control.
If God
doesn't want you to be there, you're not going to be there.
Well said. Yeah. Well, over the years of your spiritual life, how have you changed? I mean, that's one of the reasons we understand our spiritual lives has a great impact on us, is when we see a changed life. Mm-hmm. Reports are, now I can't verify any of this because I didn't know you. This is the first time I've ever spoken with you, but some reports are from some musicians that I've spoken to in the industry are, that, you know, there were times when you came across a little arrogant back in the day. And are you able to look back and see God's hand in your life?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I don't know whether arrogance is the word. I don't think I ever got arrogant. I maybe put a lot of demands on people because I was trying to push a particular standard.
And that could be perceived as being arrogant, can it?
You're cracking
the whip.
Yeah, see, it's kind of hard for people maybe to understand. You're trying to push an envelope. It isn't that you're trying to, I can't take somebody beyond what they're capable of playing musically, but if I know that they're capable of a certain thing and I see them falling down to a particular level, then I've got to nudge them because they surround themselves with many other people, and I don't want talented people to fall into that particular lackadaisical attitude. Usually you will find that talented people like working with other talented people. Very creative people enjoy working with creative people and good people, because it takes your artistic values and lifts them up, and they bounce off of you. As I said before, it's like a spoke, all these spokes in a wheel. As long as every spoke does its job, the wheel goes around very successfully and very smooth.
Hmm.
So I was just one spoke within the wheel. I was very sure of where I was going. I was very positive of where I was going. And I a lot of times, if there was something that I didn't like on a stage or I felt was awkward, I would change it. And if somebody didn't do something on stage that they were supposed to do, I would tell them about it. That's not arrogant.
No.
That's just, I'm paying you good money. And just do the job.
Yeah, it's really iron sharpening iron. It's lifting your game. It's not allowing people to settle.
Yeah, I'm very respectful of an audience. I mean, we go out and we do shows, and people are paying $35 or $40 to come and see me, and I don't want to drag a bunch of musicians out that they're late getting to the theater. They don't take the time to dress properly. Their shoes aren't shined. They've got shirt tails hanging out. My band dress professionally. They're there before the shows. They're ready to go. We get together before we go on, like that we're focused. How are you guys? Good. You know, like, we've had a long day today. Let's, get our act together. Let's start thinking. And you get them motivated. I mean, and these people, what you're doing the show for. I don't want to go out and do a show and then have people come back and say, gee, no, that wasn't much of a show and the band didn't look this. Where you come to my show, you'll see they're not dressed in jeans and shirts hanging out and everything else. They're very well groomed and they do a professional job. Mm. And that's the kind of people that I like going up and down the road with.
Well, there's that professionalism coming in again, and that's what that's really what's lifted this show to the caliber it had to last 27 years.
If people forget, the word show business always has this funny ring to it. You know, you say, well, it's the very show business, but it is a show. But there's also business aspects to it, and it has to be operated like it is a business. A lot of people just, their egos get in the way, and they get a couple of hit records, and they're off in Looney Tune time somewhere.
Sure.
And they just forget, thinking it's all going to fall together. Well, it isn't just going to all fall together. It is a business, and you must be, you must conduct it like a business, and it doesn't hurt to say a prayer every once in a while and thank God for your blessings.
Well, having or being yourself in a relationship with the creator of the universe,
mm-hmm.
Would you say that Jesus has helped to keep your ego in check?
I think that God has put many blessings upon me. I'm not sure whether Jesus is concerned whether my ego isn't there, but I'm sure that whatever I have accomplished or ever achieved, it's with the hand of God that has been guiding me, and and I'm not making fact. I mean, I'm the role of Jesus is very important, and I pray every day to our Heavenly Father and ask for those prayers in and through his precious son, Jesus.
Hmm. Well said. Very well said. Well, I guess, sort of finally, in wrapping up the spiritual side of this conversation, what spiritual disciplines have you maybe brought into your daily routine to keep you healthy spiritually?
Reading the Bible every day has helped me, and I must admit, I there's very few times when I do miss, but I try reading the Bible every day. And the odd time I may miss, but I make a very strong effort no matter what I do. If I've got to do something, I would just say, okay, I've got an hour that I'm going to set aside, and I just turn the radio off and just go to a quiet room and sit and go through the Bible and read it.
Hmm.
And I have three. We have a reading planner, you know, so I know which three I'm going to read, and you just read three every single day. And I think that helps spiritually to keep you in check. You just, you know, you read every single day, and I think that's what you have to do. There's so many things that will pull you away from this world. You know, we got to go to a hockey game. Oh, we'll meet you for dinner first. And then, before I do that, I've got to do some work around the house. And then, did you see that television show? No, I think I'll go and watch it. And it just keeps them, pretty soon you have no time to sit down and study the Word of God. You got to stop and just throw the brakes on every once in a while and just take that time. And it really helps you. You don't have to do all three of them at once. Do one in the morning, and if you're busy on your lunch break, take your Bible with you and open it up and read one more, and then later in the afternoon do your third reading.
Heavy times of doubt over the years? Have you gone through any times where you've just said, you know what, seriously, come on.
My faith?
Yeah, just with your faith.
No.
Really?
You try reading the Bible every day, and boy, it keeps reassuring you. That book's the most amazing thing in the world.
Hmm.
And the deeper you get into it, the more you learn, and the more Bible classes you go to, the more, anytime I hear that there's a group of churchgoers that are doing a special thing on maybe Prophecy Day, or maybe there's something on these storms that we seem to be having, earthquakes and hurricanes and tsunamis and all these various things, and you know, the 7/11s and terrorism and all these kind of things. It's good to sit and read the Bible and just to see what, if there's anything in there that it talks about. And the more you read, the more you learn, the more comfort you have. You become aware of what God's plan and that God is in control. You may not think it, but boy, every single minute of every day, God is totally in control.
I couldn't have said it better. Folks, Tommy Hunter, 68 years old, is that right?
Yeah, I guess it is. Or man. Am I 69? Born in 37.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
No, 68. You're
68,
right.
All right.
Why am I trying to age myself?
What are you doing there? Just trying to beat Gordon Lightfoot. 68 years old and still doing 50, up to 50 concerts a year.
Yeah, we got another tour coming up in January and February, so I'm not going to sit here and waste all your time plugging those dates. But Drew, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and again, I want to thank the Canadian Gospel Music Association and all its members for the wonderful honor that I'll be receiving tonight, and I really appreciate that. And to all your listeners, I thank you very much. I've enjoyed the interview. I hope that I haven't bored everybody to tears. They'll probably have to play some loud music and shake them and wake them. But, Drew, thank you very much. And God willing, we'll get a chance to hopefully talk to you sometime in person.
So we'll have all the people visit your website, TommyHunter.com. Go there, check out all the details. You can keep in touch with them and find out more about these concerts and buy a whole whack of CDs while you're at it. That'd be a good thing. Thank you so much, Tommy. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Drew. God bless.
I'm working on a building. I'm working on a building. I'm working on a building for my Lord, for my Lord. Now it's the Holy Ghost building. It's the Holy Ghost building. It's the Holy Ghost building for my Lord, for my Lord. If I was a gambler, I'd tell you what I would do. I'd quit my gambling and I'd work on the building too. And I'm working on a building. I'm working on a building. I'm working on a building for my Lord, for my Lord. Now it's the Holy Ghost building. It's the Holy Ghost building. It's the Holy Ghost building for my Lord, for my Lord. Well, if I was a drunkard, I'd tell you what I would do. I'd quit my drinking, and I'd work on the building, too. And I'm working on a building, I'm working on a building. I'm working on a building for my Lord.
Well, that's it for today, folks. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Next week on the show, we've got Allie Matthews, singer-songwriter from Canada, London, Ontario. No, Woodstock, I don't know, somewhere out there. And my good friend, my good mate from Australia, Mr. Phil Davidson, will be joining us. Two phenomenal musicians live in the studio performing for you folks. As well, Steve Russo, author of a book called What's the Deal with Wicca? A deeper look into the dark side of today's witchcraft. Of course, that's our Halloween show next week, being October 29th. So hopefully you can tune in and join us. Visit our website, www.drewmarshall.ca. And until then, hey, do me a favor, will you? Tell someone about the show. Take care.